Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Helen.
And this is the Squiggly Careers Podcast. Every week we talk about a different topic to do with work and we share some ideas and tools that we hope will help you to succeed in your squiggly career.
And if you are a new listener to Squiggly, welcome. You might not know that as well as this episode, we also produce lots of different things to help you with your career. So you can download a one-page summary of today's episode. We'll tell you what we're talking about in a minute. And you can also join a weekly session that we do, which is called Pod Plus, where we talk to the community about the topic. And actually, it's a really nice community. People will share their ideas and their experiences. And if you ever need a little bit of a boost, I think it's just quite a nice conversation to be part of. And it's all free. You can find out the information on that in the show notes on Apple, or just go to our website, which is amazingif.com. Head to the podcast page and you'll be able to see everything there. So today we are talking about meetings, specifically how to make every meeting matter, which you might be thinking, impossible task, impossible task. That is an ambitious title for this episode, Helen and Sarah. And it isn't, it's a topic we have covered before, but it was a while ago when I was researching. I was like, when did we last really talk about meetings? It was episode 110. So that is many episodes ago. And it was back in 2019, i.e., pre-pandemic. And so I think talking about meetings pre-pandemic is quite different to the way that we work now. It's probably one of the things that has changed the most, actually, in how we have meetings now. And there are some particular differences that are sort of worth being aware of because it informs what we're going to talk about today. So A, more meetings. So average time Teams users spent in meetings has more than tripled between Feb 2020 pre-pandemic to Feb 2022. And obviously that's just on Microsoft Teams as a platform. The mix of meetings has changed. So perhaps unsurprisingly, remote meetings have now increased by 60% since pre-pandemic. And also the quality of meetings. So we might be having more meetings and the mix might have changed, but the quality of them hasn't improved. They are actually rated in some recent research by Microsoft as the number one productivity killer at work. Hooray! Like meetings aren't everyone's favourite way to spend their day, but we all find ourselves in them. So that's why we wanted to tackle it a little bit and see if we could make meetings and the moments that they feature a bit better for everyone.
And they're obviously such a challenge for organisations that there are some really fascinating case studies that you can read of companies that have really started from sort of ground zero when it comes to meetings. So Shopify, for example, they completely started from scratch. So they took out every single meeting. Their employees then had to wait 2 weeks and then you could decide, you know, which ones do you want to add back in. But they then had no meetings on Wednesday and there was a like pound or dollar sign attached to each meeting. So depending on the level of the people, like how much they were paid and the people then in that meeting, you could see how much that meeting costs. And through doing this, apparently 322 hours worth of meeting time was removed. And it just really made me, I was just imagining, you know, that thing of like just seeing these like pound signs on meetings, like no wonder no one added them back in again. You'd be absolutely terrified of meeting anyone.
But can't you imagine like someone with a real ego being like, oh, it's so expensive to have a meeting with me. I'd rather they created like a meeting currency that was universal, you know, like each meeting minute costs this much to the company rather than, ooh, that meeting's got senior people in it, it costs, their time is worth more in a way.
Yeah, and I hope I've understood that right. But I think that is sort of how it was described. But there are quite a few examples of organisations who've done something similar where, you know, sort of tweaking around the edges clearly doesn't feel like it's going to have enough of an impact. Or maybe they've tried one meeting 3 days a week and it's like nothing changed, like no one's doing anything differently. And so they've almost said, right, we've got to almost assume no meetings and then almost build back up from there. And apparently people are much more then intentional about, you know, as you would be, because you suddenly kind of create this sense of actually, well, what's the meeting for? And you start to ask different questions, I think. And we've all experienced meetings, so we thought it'd be quite fun to describe a good versus a bad meeting. So, Helen, how are you feeling after a good meeting?
I think I have felt impactful, like there was value in me being part of it, rather than, you know, when you sit there and you think that wasn't a really good use of my time, I didn't add anything to it. So I think I feel like I have been impactful. And I also feel like it's a positive meeting for me if I felt very present. You know, so if I felt like mentally in the meeting, I think there are quite a lot of meetings that I'm in where it's in my diary, but I don't really think it's in my brain, you know, because my brain's in a few other places. So I think I've been impactful and I've been able to be present. That's probably a good meeting for me. What about you?
Good meetings for me. I'm always looking for clarity. So I want to know, you know, what's most important to talk about? Why are we talking about it? What decisions have we made? I think I do appreciate structure. And so I sort of like that sense of we're really clear about why we're here and what we're trying to do. And I always know I've had a good meeting because I just feel really energized. I actually feel energized afterwards. So as somebody who is introverted and I do get drained if I spend too much time with people, so I definitely need time to kind of reboot. There are a couple of meetings I'm thinking about over the past couple of weeks where actually as we were starting the meeting, one of our partners shared priority they got with me that I didn't know beforehand, but they said, oh, could we use the second half of the meeting to talk about ... And we did in both instances. We kind of made time to do that. Actually, it was really, I just felt really upbeat. Like you feel like you've been really useful. You feel like that actually you've talked about the thing that has been like helpful for somebody else. So I think that point about like helpful and useful as well.
And what about bad meetings then? That was nice. Those meetings sound great. Are they all like that?
No, I was thinking actually, do you know, I reckon a sign of a really bad meeting is then when you have to have a conversation about how bad the meeting was. And I was listening to Adam Grant talk a little bit about this as well. And like, you know, like rumination over, oh, why that meeting was so frustrating. Everyone's more confused at the end than they were at the start. And then obviously you waste even more time doing that. So it's sort of unproductive squared because you've had a bad meeting. And then it sort of has this really bad ripple effect. And I think the other thing, which sounds a bit harsh, but I think it sort of probably goes back to what you were saying, is like, you know, if you just feel like a meeting's been pointless and you just feel like, well, it didn't need me, I've not been helpful. And so I've just lost time that I could have spent on something else. And I think I've probably always felt that in my career, but I really feel that now, probably more than ever, because there's always something I'd want to be doing. I could be researching a podcast. I could be asking an interesting question on LinkedIn, ready for a podcast case study. You know, there's loads of ways I'd want to spend my time. I'd love to have infinite time on all things career development. So I think now I feel it more keenly than ever before if I feel like a time in a meeting was wasted rather than well spent. What about you? What's a bad meeting for you?
Oh, well,
meeting
with
me?
No. Well, yes, all the time. No. Yes. I think mine is my issue, actually, a lot of the time. So of course there are some meetings where I'm like, oh, what's the agenda and all that kind of stuff, but I think the meetings that I find most frustrating are when I feel like I'm on the clock, if you know what I mean. I'm like, I've got lots to do, so I am very conscious of time in my mind. And when people are talking around a topic longer than I, which I don't think is necessarily right, it's just my opinion, rather like longer than I think we need to, I find that really frustrating. And I'd be like, we could talk about this in 5 minutes and then get on. But I do recognise, and you know I'm like that, you know I am. But I do recognise that that's a me thing. And I also recognise that people take different things from meetings. I think me things versus, you know, the meeting that other people need to have is interesting. And I've just tried to acknowledge that for a lot of the time, for me, meetings are quite functional. Like, you know, okay, what do we need to talk? Can we get it done? Are we all clear? Let's move on. Like, I think that is quite me in my approach. But actually, for other people, the purpose of that meeting might be slightly different. Even though it's an agenda there, that meeting might be more about connection. It might be about something else. And so I try to not just make that meeting about what I need to get from it. But I do find it hard. I do, when people loop around and go round and round, I'm like, yeah, move on. You know I do.
Well, I guess, though, there is a good point in there, though, about cross wires in terms of the purpose of getting together. Because if you do think, well, it is really important that we cover these three areas and make these three decisions, and someone else is just thinking, oh, I'd just like to connect and see how everyone's doing or how everyone's feeling, and that this is more of a discussion than a decision meeting, then that, I don't think that's helpful for anyone. So there's probably a bit of self-awareness from you in there, which you just shared.
Well, but there's also feedback. Probably a lovely lovely Lucy in our team who might be listening to this now. She gave me some feedback on our one-to-ones, and she said, like, I found it more helpful in our one-to-ones when we're sort of talking around a topic. So I can go into a meeting to just be quite task focused, like, okay, let's go through this, let's go. And she's like, no, I'd like to talk around it and inform it and think. And that actually was really, really useful feedback, because yeah, I think I'd been feedback. Too tasky in a meeting. So I think, yeah, that's just my perspective. But I guess the main point is other people have different perspectives on what meetings might be. And sometimes you might need to talk about that so that you are all getting what you need from them.
And so today we're going to share three quite big ideas around how to make meetings matter. But before we do that, we thought it was just worth giving meetings a bit of credit. Just talking about why, when they are good, they can actually be great. Because meetings were originally introduced when organisations were moving away from command and control as a way of working. So in lots of ways, then you sort of didn't need to have meetings because you just did what you were told. So there is a sort of potential, at least, democratisation of everybody involved, people feeling that they can contribute, people's voices being heard. It's just whether, you know, that actually feels like the reality for people. So I suspect we can all think about, if we give meetings a break for a moment, we can all think about great meetings, meetings where we feel really good, where we feel like we're making great progress. I suspect the problem is there's just not enough of those.
And also, I think meetings could become even better, not just with the ideas for action, but with the role of technology. So I was reading some interesting stuff. Microsoft have done a lot of research. They have this like Future Work Lab stuff that does lots of interesting research with all the data that they get from Microsoft Teams. And there was a quote in one of the articles that I was reading, and we'll put it in the pod sheet if you want to kind of dive into some of their work. But it talked about meetings becoming knowledge objects, which I thought was really interesting. So traditionally, meetings, you need to sort of be present in them in order to learn from them and contribute to them. But now meetings are sort of knowledge objects. So if you've got anything like Microsoft Copilot running, or maybe like Fireflies or Poised, all these bits of technology which basically capture the conversation that's going on in a meeting, this idea of a meeting as a knowledge object is almost like an artifact that you can refer back to. So let's say I haven't felt particularly present, or I was a bit distracted in a meeting. If that has been captured using one of those tech tools, then I can query it afterwards. I can maybe have to leave early or whatever. I can say, let me know when my name was mentioned in the meeting. Like, I could literally query the conversation because it would have been recorded, and I could see all the times that my name might have come up, or I could ask it what were the top three actions that were assigned to people. And I just think it's quite interesting about, we used to have to be present to get the most out of a meeting, but now I think you can potentially not be present, potentially, like, either not be in there or not be mentally in there, if you're me sometimes, but you can still get value from it in the way that the sort of meeting has been captured. So I feel like we're in a really interesting time with what tech is doing for meetings, actually.
And one of the things that apparently happens a lot with meetings in particular is this concept that I'd never come across before. It's not a lovely phrase, to be honest, but it's called pluralistic ignorance. And I was like, oh, it doesn't sound like good news. But essentially, it's when you sort of think that other people hold a different opinion to you, but you imagine that everybody thinks that thing. So apparently with meetings, often we think we're the only one. So we might be saying to ourselves, well, this meeting is a waste of time or a bit of a shambles, or it's so unproductive. But we assume that everyone else thinks it's productive, and everyone else maybe seems to be engaged or present. And then sort of nobody ends up doing anything about it. Apparently it happens a lot when you maybe see something that's going wrong and you assume, oh, well, they must be helping, so sort of I don't need to help. And so apparently it's become one of those norms that no one really speaks out about, because everyone's just got so used to it. And there's quite a lot of fear with meetings, like, oh, if I'm not in it, you know, if I'm not seen to be in it, does that mean I'm going to be out of the loop? And do I need to make sure I'm at least seen to be in that meeting for things like influence and impact and those sorts of things? And so I actually think there are actually quite a lot of sort of attitudes and behaviours that we've got used to over a really long period of time, where making every meeting matter, I reckon, for pretty much all of us means quite a lot of unlearning and relearning.
Mm. I could totally imagine being like, oh, I can't make that meeting today, but I'll catch up on it later. And my catch up is literally just like searching the transcription and be like, yep, got it in 2 minutes. I mean, I could totally say that's my solution.
I mean, are we going to get to a point where you and I just never need to meet? We'll just, oh, you'll just be like, well, can you just record it?
Just record it and I'll query it and it'll be fine. Yeah. That sounds great. There are some other ideas though, before we default to that outcome for our meetings.
So idea number one is to use questions or decisions to create agendas. So I was reading some really interesting work by a guy called Dr. Stephen Rogelberg, and he wrote two books, The Surprising Science of Meetings and Glad We Met, which is more about one-to-one meetings. And there's a good HBR free article that you can read from him. What is interesting, and I saw this actually, we asked on LinkedIn today for people's top tip on how to make meetings more useful. And lots of people say, have an agenda. It's all about having an agenda. Now, the science would tell you that's not true. Having an agenda or not having an agenda makes little difference to the effectiveness of a meeting. It's actually what's on that agenda and how that agenda is sort of framed that actually really matters. And so this idea of, rather than having, you know, like lots of agendas are just a bullet point list of, these are the five things that we need to talk about. I think that's how I would always imagine an agenda. He actually suggests that you convert those, that sort of laundry list, as I think he describes it, into a questions that we need to answer together or decisions that we need to make, because it really crystallizes the purpose of a meeting. So for example, so I had a go with a meeting that we will be having soon, and then sort of slightly made up the alternatives. But you could just see agenda item one, cash flow. And you just think, okay, we're going to be talking about cash flow. Or you could write something like, how do we increase our cash flow by 10% in the next financial year? So you've then got real clarity on what you're going to discuss in that meeting. Or you might write decision, invest cash in project A or project B, ? And the reason that really helps people is the majority of people really appreciate knowing beforehand what they're going to talk about. And there's a brilliant lady who I follow on LinkedIn called Dr. Carrie Goucher, who I actually got in touch with sort of slightly randomly on LinkedIn and said, oh, is it okay if I mention some of your work? She's sort of got a PhD and she really focuses on meetings. And she says that if you share agendas beforehand, it's much more neuro-inclusive. And she mentioned that so many people don't appreciate an ambush. Now, I know it won't always feel like an ambush, but I am definitely one of those people where if you give me a question or a decision, it really helps me, because I'll just sort of start mulling it over in my mind. And it also just means we know exactly what we're there to do. And the kind of top tip on this is, if you've got more than one question or decision, which, you know, you might have a list that you're working your way through, just always put your most important ones first, because there's quite a lot of evidence that, you know, people run out of time with meetings, or perhaps sometimes it takes longer to discuss one thing than you'd imagined. And so it just means that you've also gone with, well, what matters most? And hey, maybe if you come back to one of those questions in a further meeting, that's okay. So I mean, I am a real convert to this. I've spent a lot of time looking at this today and I'm like, that's it. Every agenda now should have questions or decisions. What do you think, Helen? Are you convinced?
I do like them. So it makes, to your point, my brain starts thinking. Whereas, you know, if it's a bit, I might be distracted by the ambiguity of it just saying cash flow and thinking, well, have we got a problem with cash flow? Or like, yeah, should I be worried? Whereas I think the question, it creates clarity and curiosity at the same time, which I quite like that. So you're probably going to get people's brains, you're sort of warming up your brains for the conversation. I was just thinking about some of our agendas, Sarah, that you often create. I'm rubbish at agendas, everyone. I just sort of rock up and I'm like, right, yeah, what we're here to talk about.
Well, the argument is like that me just doing those agendas is not enough. So this is how I need to be. So just you wait till our next agenda.
Well, I'm all right about it. I rationalise it. In that,
yeah, you never read them.
Well, I think it's more for you.
And I just accept
that.
Yeah, great. But I think you need it. And I recognise that. And that's fine. But I was just thinking the amount of bullet points that go on those lists sometimes. I was like, you're going to spend a lot of time writing questions. But I do quite like the questions. I probably just like fewer of them in our meetings.
Yeah.
Fewer questions for us to address.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And on that point of kind of sort of fewer, we're also going to address in idea number 2, making meetings shorter. So just back to that kind of research I was reading in the Microsoft stuff. There's some really interesting pictures, like a picture of...
Those brain pictures blew my mind, Helen.
Should we put these pictures in the pod sheet so people can see?
Are we allowed to? I think we're all allowed to, as long as we link to the research,
we can reference
right?
It. All right, we'll put the pictures. Basically, these pictures, everybody, are of what our brain looks like in back-to-back meetings. And they did some research where I think it was 2 hours, so not even like loads, to be honest. I feel like... some days it's much worse than that. But it was 2 hours of meetings, 4:30. One group had 4 30-minute meetings back to back. The other group had 4 meetings, but rather than back to back, they had, I think it was 15 minutes to meditate or 15 or 10 minutes to meditate.
10, I think.
Between each meeting. And they show you basically what's happening to the brain, and it's kind of the colours are to indicate what's happening. And I guess the spoiler is stress. So what happens when you have back to back meetings with no breaks is stress accumulates in your brains, and you can visually see what's happening.
You can literally see it,
pictures.
Can't you?
Yeah. It's like you're like, oh my gosh.
They show you your brain, it's like changing colour.
Basically, the happy brains are like blue and green, and the not so happy brains are like yellow and red and orange because they're sort of accumulating all this stress. And other than that, not feeling very nice, the outcome of it in terms of your effectiveness is you are more likely to get distracted throughout the day and lose focus. So the more back-to-back meetings you have, the less effective you are in them. And there was another bit in that research I thought was quite interesting, which is about the transitions between meetings are peak points of stress. And I thought, I was like, oh, I get that. And I think it makes me start meetings really ineffectively. So if I'm back to back and I know I do it, I will arrive in the next meeting and I'll be like, I'll either apologize a lot, I'm really sorry, I'm late, or gosh, what a day. You know, I just sort of outpour what I'm feeling, which I think is a really demotivating start for somebody who might have wanted this meeting with you and has been waiting for it for the week to have it. But these points, the transition between back-to-back meetings, are really where you see the stress start to peak. So we want to avoid this. We don't want meetings to be this situation where as they sort of go on, you become less good in them. That's not really going to help us with that impact. And there are some simple things that we can do to counteract what might happen. So the first thing is 15-minute meetings, which you might be like, oh, that's just a sticking plaster solution. But I think very often there are some meetings that might be in your diary for half an hour or 45, even if you just experiment with, okay, this week I'm going to take two or three of the meetings that are normally by default, because a lot of our meetings are in our diaries by default because they're sort of recurring meetings, and try it for 15 minutes. You can get some what worked well, even better, if feedback from your team afterwards. So you're not saying it's always going to be 15 minutes. Maybe it's every other version of that meeting. So if it's a weekly meeting, 1 week it's 15 minutes, the next week you keep to your 30. But just that kind of keeping meetings shorter means you're more focused and you might be able to start thinking, well, what do I need to do for more of my meetings to be like that? And maybe you can start calling them like, oh, let's put 15 minutes in rather than the default 30 minutes for people. I've actually started in my emails with people being a bit more explicit about the time. So I used to say, let's get a meeting in. And then some people have put it in for an hour and I'd be like, oh no, we didn't need an hour. And then it's a bit awkward to reduce it.
Yeah.
So now I'm more explicit. I'll be like, oh, let's just put 20 minutes in for a quick catch up on that thing. And I kind of frame that time. The other way you can do this is stand-up meetings, which could work virtually or in person, but they tend to be shorter because if people, I think, are just more conscious. It feels a bit unusual to do it because it might not be the norm for most people. So it feels a bit unusual. So you're just a bit more conscious of the length of the meeting. So that can be a way of kind of triggering this slightly shorter meeting. The other thing with the transitions that I think is quite interesting is there anything you can do at the start of a meeting so that people can sort of transition into it a bit better? And what I noticed with some of our things is that obviously not everyone arrives on time. So you've got some people that will be there and some people that are coming for another meeting. So I will often say when people are joining, let's all just take a couple of minutes. We'll start at 5 past when everyone's ready to go, rather than be like, make the people who are coming at 3 minutes past just arrive straight into the conversation. There might be some other things that you can do. I know some companies start with like a meditation at the start. I can't quite imagine doing that, but I do know some companies do. But that for me, I'll often just go, let's just take a couple of minutes while everyone's coming in so we're ready to go at 5 past. Can manage some of that stress. Which one of those could you imagine doing, Sarah?
All of them. I like all of those ideas. And actually, one of the podcasts I was listening to a podcast about meetings to prepare for a podcast about meetings, which is always interesting. But one of the examples they gave in that was, if you choose a recurring meeting that you own, you know, so it kind of belongs to you and you can just update the invite. If you make it shorter, they said that most of the time people don't notice and that nobody ever asks for it to go back to a longer meeting. It just doesn't happen. And every time they've researched stand-up meetings, they are always just as effective as any other meeting, but they are always shorter because part of it's also that you're uncomfortable. You know, like standing up, you sort of go, there's only so long people kind of want to stand up for. I was trying to imagine you taking more breaks as somebody who doesn't take loads of breaks. And I think often sort of deprioritizes breaks in favor of getting the job done and being very efficient. Have those pictures of the brain, have they changed what you might do, do you think?
No, but... No, very interesting.
Say what you really think. I was like, maybe this is the moment where she starts taking breaks.
No, but I know I do. I don't like arriving in a meeting and like downloading stress onto other people. I don't like that. And so that idea of kind of starting better in terms of my brain, it really resonated with me seeing those like peak transitions. So that's made me think something differently. And then I think what I would do, and we'll come on to this because Sarah and I are going to share our top tips, but if you make a meeting 45 minutes in length, what I would value is just sort of 5 minutes to kind of do some quick actions before I moved on to the next. Because I think one thing that causes me stress with back-to-back meetings is just the actions accumulating along the way and not seeing any time when they're going to get done. So I think... I don't know if I get steadily more distracted. I think I just get steadily more frustrated.
Yeah.
And because of that, and I'm like, oh, I've got so much now to do because of all these meetings that I've been in. That's probably my bigger issue that I would try and address, I think, by if shorter meetings mean that I can get actions done more quickly, I would feel like I was more effective.
And so idea number three, which builds from that, is don't default, decide. So many meetings happen by default, whether that is time or who's in them. And so I think some really good questions to ask are, one, does it need to be a meeting? One of the really good ideas that we had from our Squiggly Career community from a great lady called Melanie Morris, who I actually used to work with, she was saying how much she's using videos to do, you know, updates or informs where you don't need a meeting, you don't need the discussion. Really good for asynchronous working, so if everyone's working in different times and different places. And she's mentioned really good for when it's hard to get in front of people, you know, like it's just a struggle to kind of find time in people's diary. And she recommended something called Vidyard, which I had a look at and looks amazing and better than the very basic versions that I've had a go at before. And so, you know, always just like, first of all, just asking that question, like, is this the right format? Is it a meeting? Or actually, is it an email? Is it a video? And I tested that with someone in our team today where she was saying, I'm really struggling to find time with you and Helen. And I said, any chance you could do as a video with your key points, which she duly did that day. And I've watched it and that's it. Done. Like, you know, like, I don't think we need to have that meeting now. I haven't got any questions. It's really clear. So I think that's the first thing, like, just check you're having, a meeting is the sort of right answer to what you're trying to achieve. Next, who do we need to involve? So I read one example of an organisation where you had to ask permission for more than 5 people to be in a meeting.
Who did you ask?
Oh, I think your manager. I think you had to ask, you know, which, ooh, I mean, I was like, I mean, it's not for me because it feels a bit school-like, doesn't it? You know, like, ask my teacher permission. But I do get their point. Mm. And when I was getting the advice again from Dr. Carey, she always suggests consult widely but meet smallly. So, you know, it doesn't mean you don't go and talk to lots of people, but when you're actually meeting, like, keep it small and be specific. Decide how long does it need to be. Back to Helen's point, probably the shorter the better. No one will ever, I think, be annoyed at you for a short meeting. Next decision, how am I going to involve everybody to make sure everybody has the chance to contribute? So I really like this one, not something we've talked about lots, but back to the original purpose of meetings. And Carrie was saying to me that one of the things that's really useful at the beginning of meetings is to get people contributing straight away, you know, early, often, and equally as possible. And I was thinking, oh, I don't think I think about that very often, or I don't think I do that. I'd be much more likely to, you know, say, what decision do we need to make, or what's the question we're sort of working on today? And I can definitely think of examples of meetings that we have in our team where not everybody does contribute early or equally, you know, because then everyone feels like part of it. And back to your point, everybody feels really present. So I really liked that idea of, like, how do you get everyone speaking, like, early on? Because actually, if they're not, then they probably don't need to be there. And then measure. So how are we going to know if these meetings are useful? Are we going to ask people to rate them? Are we ever going to review them? And the top tip that Dr. Carey said to me here was, she was like, just do a reset on your highest value meetings. So, you know, the ones that really matter most, if it feels too overwhelming to sort of sort it all, and identify whether they are a transform, improve, or sunset, which basically means kill it. And actually, if you just took 3 meetings a week that you were like, well, I have these meetings all the time, they really matter. Have I asked myself, am I in default mode, which I reckon most of us are with meetings, or have I made really active, intentional decisions about this meeting? We can probably just make some changes quite quickly, I suspect. So I liked how practical that was.
I actually scanned through my diary before this conversation, and I was trying to look at the meetings that I had, and I was trying to work out if I was going to change them, what would I change? And also kind of what kind of meetings were in my diary. And actually, a lot of our time, for mine and Sarah's time, we're spent with organisations delivering training. So it's not, it might look like a meeting in our diary, but that's a kind of a moment to do what we do. And so I kind of took those out when I was looking, and I was just looking at internal meetings. And they were a mixture of one-to-one conversations with people in the team and sort of progressing certain projects that we've got. And I thought, actually, I thought I didn't look at my diary and go, they're the wrong meetings to be in there. I think it was an interesting, it was quite validating, actually. You know, sometimes meetings, you might feel like, oh, gosh, I'm in lots of meetings. To me, actually, it wasn't about killing any meetings that I've got. It was about improving the quality of them. So I do think there's a quality quantity thing with meetings, and you've got to be, what is it that you need to fix?
I had the same reflection when I was sort of, we've ended up diving quite deep into meetings over the past few days. And I do also wonder whether we have the luxury of, maybe when you're smaller, and this is a sort of hypothesis from me, you're sort of starting from scratch. And so you do tend to start a bit more with the essentials. Maybe it's easier to be a bit more intentional. Whereas this podcast I was listening to today said loads of people start at organisations, you know, like particularly big ones, and then you're just in a meeting from the start, and maybe you don't even ever know why, but also you just stay in it forever. And if I think back to the big companies that you and I have both been part of, I was in way more meetings that weren't in my control. it was both kind of quantity of meetings and very, very mixed quality, I would say. Definitely more of, well, I sort of have to be here, even if I'm not that useful. Maybe I don't think I've ever had a conversation about, like, are these meetings the right meetings? Have we really done that kind of decide versus default? And so I do wonder whether we are sort of lucky to some extent that because we do what we do and we're smaller and you kind of have that ability, almost if we were in a meeting that didn't matter, we would straight away be like, well, why are we doing it?
Yeah.
But I don't think I've always been in that position to be able to do that.
I agree. I think when I was in Microsoft, I would say there was sort of like a micro meeting culture, which is where you could decide in your team, oh, this is how we're going to approach meetings. But then a different department who might put meetings in your diary had a different meeting culture, or the US had a different meeting culture. And you're sort of kind of competing with all those. So I think actually probably what helps in that context is to get a few different stakeholders who are probably in different teams, you know, like where the meetings are flowing from, to maybe agree an approach. And then the measurement of those meetings probably becomes even more important because you're trying to show demonstrably that it's better if we do it in this way. So we wanted to close today with our personal top tips that we do to try and make meetings as effective as possible. So Sarah, what is your top tip?
To rotate responsibility for meetings. So I think this is a really useful way for everybody to feel involved and included. And I think sometimes there's an assumption that a certain person has to lead a meeting or the most senior person has to lead a meeting. And I just think that's often not true. And then it also shares the accountability and responsibility for things like setting the agenda. So not always the same person who has to write the questions or frame the decisions. And also not always the same person who has to write up those actions or share them, which, you know, might in the future not even be a person. You know, there's AI that can do a fair bit of that for you today.
And my one's probably obvious because I think I've referenced it a few times, but it's to do as many actions as possible in the meeting. Often some that are more involved that I need to think about, I can't do. But sometimes if it's, oh, actually, we need to send a quick email, or could we just check in the status of that project? Rather than that being another thing that I will add, I will often say, can you just give me 2 minutes? I'll get that sorted now. And I feel like that sort of progress in parallel with the meeting. That might be really annoying for some people that I have meetings with, but to be honest, it's much more likely that it gets done than if I put it on a list and I never get to it.
Yeah, I think I've seen you do it and it's not for me, I think it's fair to say, as in it's not something that I would do. And I think initially I found it a bit distracting. So I think, but knowing you, it's fine because I know you very well, but I think it's probably something where you definitely have to signal almost like, I'm just going to press pause for 2 minutes to do this now, because if I don't, I'm going to struggle find the time to get it done. And then almost, I think if people know that's what you're doing and it's got, you know, you've got very positive intent behind it, then they know they're not sort of losing you. They're not losing your focus or they're not losing your attention. It's just that you're trying to make progress because you know it's important. So yeah, I think you just have to like say out loud what you're doing, because it is quite an unusual thing to do. And it does sometimes feel like I lose you a bit, you know, because it's like, oh, you've gone off to another place or space to then send an email or check. And then I'm like, oh, what, like where? And like, I think my brain gets a bit frantic just like watching you be that efficient. So yeah,
I'd like more talking and doing meetings. That's what, you know, we're like, it's, I don't mind having a meeting with you for 45 minutes if it's talking and doing. If it's
just, yeah, I'd say.
I'd like.
Discussing and doing. Discussing and doing.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully that has been helpful for you. We'll summarise it all in the pod sheet. We'll put those brilliant pictures of brains and we will credit the research that were done. And then if you'd like to join us in a conversation with Pod Plus, that will be on the Thursday morning of the week that this episode comes out.
So thank you so much for listening. We hope you found that useful and that it helps you to make those meetings matter. Let us know if you have any feedback or ideas for future episodes. We're just Helen and Sarah at squigglycareers.com. And we always really appreciate hearing your feedback and thoughts and ideas. But that's everything for this week. Thank you so much for listening and bye for now.
Bye everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.